Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hello and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Acton and with me is Travis Singleton, the Sneaker Reporter. Travis, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me, Ryan. I appreciate it, man. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's been a tough couple days in Minneapolis. I think a lot of people are feeling that. And obviously this is a basketball show and we're going to talk plenty about basketball right here. But we're also going, I just think it'd be disingenuous to start anywhere else. If you don't want to hear about, I implore you to listen to this portion of the podcast, but if you would rather just skip to the basketball part, link in the description there, I'll put a time code there that you can skip forward. But yeah, we're going to talk about the killing that happened at the hands of ICE in Minneapolis on Wednesday. Because one, the Timberwolves had a moment of silence for Renee Nicole Good at the game last night. And Finch was asked about a pregame. So that's the one reason. And I just think it's an important topic. I don't think it's something we can just skip over because it's not just our local community. It's this country. It's everything. And I'll just give my personal opinion on it. I understand people will disagree with you and or disagree with me, I should say. But from watching the video, again, I'm not going to share that video here or really anywhere else. It's easily findable. From the video, to me, it's clear that she was not attempting to do anything other than escape the situation. And for that, and I'll give a graphic warning here too, if you want to skip this part as well. She was shot in the face 3 times. And it's another added like tragedy in just the last year. Annunciation Catholic shooting back in August. Three people were killed in that in a mass shooting in June. Congresswoman Melissa Hortman and her husband were murdered in their home, assassinated in their home, along with other targets. In that, going to the game part of it is what was really hard about last night. Is that this isn't like the fortunately this is the first time that I've gone to Target Center after a tragedy. You as well. After the Hortmans were assassinated, we were at that Lynx game the day after. Cheryl Reeve was asked about the situation, just like Finch was. And it's just like, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of the violence. I'm tired of the people losing their lives. And I'm tired of the rhetoric from everywhere. Something needs to change. It's very clear that we can't ICE officers in our streets. I don't know, like she was not involved in an immigration. That's even a separate discussion of just like, I guess if you feel like she should have obeyed the traffic stuff, but the idea that a traffic violation that would have in a normal thing would have resulted in a night in county jail at the absolute max.
Yeah.
That someone would lose their life over that, I just don't think is something in a proper society that can happen and be tolerated. And so I'm scared. I'm scared for my city. I'm scared for this community. And it was nice to see a Wolves win, but I kind of feel like, and this is easy for me to say, I kind of feel like there should not have been a basketball game last night. And it was a little bit jarring for me, not to criticize any, it's not even to criticize the Wolves or anyone. I commend them for having a moment of silence. I'm sure they got pushback from certain people. It's not even to criticize them for playing because again, it's easy for me to say, I don't think that this can be treated as normal. And if that's how people quote, cope is to treat it as normal. I'm not criticizing that reaction either. I just, my personal, I didn't really want to be at Target Center last night, but I also kind of have a duty to cover the team and to cover everything going on.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess that's my thoughts on it. Travis, go ahead.
Well, I definitely want to say, you know, I appreciate you for, you know, using your platform and being able to speak on this. You know, obviously, like you said earlier, if people want to fast forward and we'll timestamp it. But, you know, this is, unfortunately, this is becoming really normal, and it shouldn't be, right? As an American, you know, we're numb to the violence now, right? Like, it happens so often now, it's repetitive. And what we saw in that video, like you said, that should have been tops one night in jail, if that. You know, it shouldn't result in that.
Let me hop in here just quick.
Yeah.
I don't even agree with that, because to me, the ICE agents escalated the situation. She was in no way. I'm just saying, like, if those were proper, I'll clarify. If those were proper police, then, like, obviously the proper thing to do would be to stop and to comply, or to, like, she was blocking the road, I guess. I'd like,
yeah.
And that's what I meant by, like, one night in jail is, like, she, if those were, but, like, as we've stated, I don't, like, they're not proper police. They're immigration agents, and she was not involved in immigration, and their policy, their stated policy is to, if someone is escaping the situation, is to let them flee. That just makes sense. And obviously, not to mention, just, like, there was three shots toward her. Like, that's just, in what world is that? Like, proper.
That's not right. You know, it's not right.
I'll let you continue. I just wanted to make sure I made myself clear on that.
You're good, bro. You're good. You know, my biggest thing is, you know, from the whole situation, you know, she didn't use the car as a weapon. You know, they stated that, you know, it was obvious she was trying to flee from the situation. She was like, you know what? This is escalating. Let me get out of here. That's what it looked like to me, you know. And the fact of the matter is, it can't become where, you know, we're scared to even be outside, walk around the city, like, be able to do normal things now. And with them being around, you know, it seems like everybody's scared. You know, I even have, you know, Mexican friends that they're like, yeah, my parents, they're not trying to leave the house. Like, you know, and that's not cool, you know. So it's becoming to the point where society, like all these shootings that you brought up earlier, it's becoming normal, and that shouldn't be the case at all. And we need to be able to make sure that, you know, guns should not be accessible to people like this. These type of weapons, I don't agree with all this. It's one thing if you're deer hunting and doing it as a hobby, a sport, but a lot of these guns that these people are getting are military weapons. You know, these are serious weapons that people are getting. And then when you bring a situation like what's happening in Minneapolis with ICE, you know, they're just going up to people. I even seen a video last night where the ICE agent kicked the memorial, you know, kicked all the candles over and this, that, and the third. Like, it's getting out of hand. And they're pulling up on people. Hey, let me see your paper. Let me see this. They're doing it to every single person. It doesn't matter what it is. It's like they're their own entity. Like, they run the world or something, you know. And I don't like the fact that people are walking around in fear. You know, and that's one thing, like, for me, like I said to you earlier, like, it's already hard enough being a black man in America, like, let alone these guys coming around just now all of a sudden they're trying to cause trouble and cause ruckus over some paperwork and because of what you guys stand for. Like, that's not what it is. And you know, I got here in 2022. I wasn't here for George Floyd. And that hurt me, you know, from afar. Like, I cried for a grown man in a city that I wasn't even in at the time. And when I got here, I appreciated Minneapolis and Minnesota just from the totality of the support, but also going to those more memorials and different things like that and actually walking like, wow, this is where it happened. You know, and, you know, with this situation, you know, with Renee, it's just, it shouldn't have happened, you know. And like you said, I feel like it's really tough to change up like a basketball game right before, but I do agree with you. I, like, it felt weird being there last night. Like, I felt like I didn't want to be there. Like, I felt like with everything going on outside the arena, I didn't feel right being there. But at the same time, like you said, some people go there to escape from what's going on outside. And sometimes you need a mental break. And I think, you know, with them doing a moment of silence, you know, kudos to them, and I respect them for doing that. And I'm one of those people that I need to be distracted for a second, you know. And I think that's what a lot of fans were. They were like, you know what, we're reminded as soon as we go out those targets and the doors, like, all right, now reality sets back in. But for that three hours, we're sitting there, we're like, you know what, like, we're focused on the job that we have to do. And last night, I really didn't want to do the job because of what was going on outside the city that I've embraced as being my home now. And, you know, and I felt uncomfortable. And even last night, they were protesting outside my window, you know, and I can hear them at night. The night before, I heard them, you know, it's really tough, you know, and it made me emotional, because it's just like, you know, you just want to be able to walk around and know that everything's going to be okay. And when you're walking around the streets now, especially in Minneapolis, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know, you know, what's going on. I mean, you know, like we talked about, I'm seeing people get tear gassed, pepper spray, maced. They got this powder that they shooting at people now. Like, it's looking like a war zone. And Minneapolis is a beautiful city that's not a war zone. And the people are amazing here. So I don't appreciate what's going on here. I don't like what they're doing. But also, I understand that us being at Target Center last night, we had a job to do. And this is a basketball show, and we're going to continue to talk about basketball. But what's right is right, and what's wrong is wrong. And when you start hurting innocent people, that's when it's a problem. And that's when people get scared, and that's when people don't want to be able to come out their house and be able to feel like they can do normal things. People don't want to go to the movies. People don't even like going to the mall. There's shootings everywhere now. And the fact that guns are accessible like this, and people like ICE are coming into situations in states like this and barging in like they run everything, that's a big problem. And for me, I've always been homebody because I don't trust a lot of people. And, you know, I know the city is hurting right now, and, you know, they got my full support. And I know they got your full support, especially being from here.
Yeah, and just to give, like, context, where Renee was killed is about a mile away from where George Floyd was killed. And like I mentioned, the Hortmans, like that is incredibly close to my house in the northern suburbs. These are hyper local things that are happening for Minnesotans, for Wolves fans. And I completely understand that like not everyone on the other side of this microphone listening to this is going to agree with everything we say, with everything else. I get that. I just, there has to, like, we just can't be okay with this. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how else to like put that to without offending anyone or whatever. Like, this can't be like a thing that happens and goes away. There has to be something. We have to care for each other. We have to, I know it sounds like frou-frou and like whatever. And like, I don't know, but like we have to love for each other. We have to have care for each other. That's what a community is. And that's what, and why it's so frustrating seeing these people come in. They're not from this community. Obviously, yeah, we could break down the issues with policing, like local policing, the Minneapolis Police Department. We certainly 6 years ago with George Floyd, like that was obviously what that was about. And that, like, if we want to have that discussion, we can. But, at least those police are largely local. I mean, yeah. Minnesota, at least Minnesota local, or Western Wisconsin local. Like, the agents coming in are just not local, and that among other issues it feels like a powder keg. It all feels unstable, and I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how to fix it. Like I said, my personal stance would have been not to have a basketball game last night, but I certainly understand and can see, or could even be swayed by the other side, like you mentioned, just trying to find any sort of reprieve. And I guess we got one. Is there anything you want to add to that before we talk about the Timberwolves and the Cavaliers of Cleveland?
Nothing, man. Honestly, like I said, man, you know, supposed to be united we stand, united we fall. You know, just be able to you know, come together as a community, come together as a country, and be able to stand for what's right. You know, at the end of the day, it's not about color. It's not about race. It's about what's right and what's wrong, right? And, you know, the biggest thing is we got to be able to be united as one, as a community. I'm a part of this community now. Like, if anybody needs anything, I'm here. You know what I'm saying? But we got to make sure that we do the right thing and continue to pray. You know, this country was built on, you know, in God we trust, right? But sometimes we got to go back to our basics and be able to stand with each other, pray with each other, and understand that whatever decisions we make moving forward, whether you're out there protesting, whether you're out there trying to be, you know, belligerent, you know, remember what the consequence is, but at the same time, make sure that you're standing for what you feel is right at the end of the day, no matter what you do.
Absolutely. All right. So we'll mark down the timestamp, 15 something minutes.
15:38 or whatever.
Yeah, well, the timer's not worth it because I bump it because I add the intro music, so I'll have to do it in post.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. So now we are going to talk about basketball. The Timberwolves are weirdly like the last, I guess Leo and I did a pod after the Wizards win, but like two pods ago, it felt like this team was down a spiral. I was out in Atlanta for that New Year's Eve loss. That was just, were you at the Brooklyn game? I can't remember the Brooklyn.
I wasn't. I was still in Boston still, but I'm back now.
Yeah. So that was kind of a theme of those, the Brooklyn loss at home, where it felt like half of the Wolves beat was enjoying Christmas festivities out of town. And so it was a very smart, it was like me, Dukowicz, and Jace Frederick at that Brooklyn game. I believe that was locker room wise, all that was in there. And then 4 days later, I'm out in Atlanta, and it's me and Chris Hine as the only two beat people on the road, covering just like an incredibly similar loss. And I'm always like hesitant to like, it's just they won four in a row, and it's like, it's always like, is it like chicken or the egg of like, was the Atlanta loss like the kick in the butt they needed to turn things around, or it just happened to be like, if you, whatever, let's say they end up with 52 wins. If you take the 52 wins and the however many losses, shake them up in your hand and like spread them across the page, you're naturally going to find 3 out of 4 losses and 4 wins in a row. Do you know, like, I'm trying to express there? Like,
yeah.
I think a lot of times maybe we like overanalyze of, well, this led to this, this led to that. And it's like, yeah, maybe, but also like they play 82 of these things and like you're bound to have good and bad stretches. So I guess do you have any big picture takeaways from either the Cavs win last night or the 4-game winning streak to start 2026?
I was going to say, yeah, like, you know how bad athletes in general, professional athletes in general, they need something to catapult them. So like if that Atlanta loss was a kick in the butt, hey man, it started there, man. In the locker room, we were down. You know how players try to get motivated after they get their ass kicked. So, you know, I think that kind of catapulted it a little bit. But then also you got to look at who you're playing, right? Who are they playing on this 4-game winning streak, right?
Heat twice, Wizards, and Cavs.
All right. So Cavs was good, but you're playing the Heat twice. They just got Tyler Hero back. They're trying to figure out how to get him back in the mix. Wizards, I expected that, you know. So, you know, so my thing is, you know, I'm not too high on the 4-game winning streak. Now, if this turns into a 10-game winning streak, then you know, that's something that we can definitely talk about, you know. But like you said, 82 games, you gotta take these mini win streaks when you can, take them in stride and make the best of every situation. And I think that's what the Wolves are doing. You know, Ant and Rudy have been dominant. Even Julius, man, I love what I'm seeing from him. But on the 4-game winning streak, you get, like I said, Miami. You know, you knew they were getting Tyler Hero back. You know, so you got to incorporate him. He's coming off the bench, you know, so it's all about how who you're playing, when you're playing them. Like, if we played Miami, I think 10 games from now, I think they'd be a totally different team than what we just saw this last, you know, this last week. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think when you play a team is so important, and over the course of 82 games, like, that type of stuff evens out. But like, you'd look at Brooklyn. They've played them twice this year. they were a mess in October and November, whenever the first game was, and they were playing. They've been playing much better basketball since about December 1st.
Right. Yeah.
The Wizards, maybe. I mean, they'll play the Wizards. Trey Young will be on that team. CJ McCollum won't. Like, so much of that stuff matters. Cleveland is 21-18 after probably, I think, being the favorites to win the Eastern Conference to start the year. So.
That's what's mind blowing to me is you know, the East is so weak right now, you know, due to injury. But then I'm looking at, you know, the Celtics are still hovering right there. You know, you got Cleveland. I thought Cleveland was going to be a lot, you know, better record wise than what they are. Obviously, playing style, I think they're amazing. I think they have the team that can do something. You got everything you need: shot blocking, shot, you know, shot creator. You got a playmaker with Garland. You got a great bench. So I thought that was a high quality win last night against them. You know, obviously things got a little murky at the end for the Wolves, but you know, overall I think they laid the smack down when it came to it. And the starters, that's mm-hmm. what's impressing me. I don't know what's gotten into all these starters, but they're carrying the team, and Chris Finch is understanding that. So he's going top heavy, where he's like, look, my starters are going to get those minutes, and we're going to keep going off of what they're doing. Even if the bench production is lower, I mean, you know, the way that the starters are playing right now, like, I wouldn't even take them off the floor. They're playing all 48 for me.
Yeah, and I mean, what I think what's good is that, like, they didn't overtax anyone. Everyone played between 34 and 38 minutes. Like, they both maximized the minutes with the starters while also not tibsing them into oblivion.
Yeah,
like you mentioned, I guess I will to quickly wrap up the Cavs. Darius Garland minus 24, Jarrett Allen minus 29. Kind of feels like I don't know, that just hasn't been working, and obviously Darius Garland is hurt. But
yeah,
I said this to, I think, you or Duke. It's like, Mitchell's fun. Mitchell's good. Maybe it's just because he's like, he's the probably the most similar player to Ant, I would say, in the league. In a lot of ways. They each went 10 for 20 from the field last night, which is an interesting coincidence.
That's funny.
You mentioned, yeah, the starters were just incredible, and we'll kind of just go down the list, I guess. Start with Ant. I thought Ant was incredibly poised basically the entire stretch of the game. What was interesting was that the Wolves, they beat the Cavs 43-22 in the third quarter, reminiscent of a couple seasons ago where they were just kicking people's butts in the third quarter, basically, yeah, the entire season. So they're up 20, basically last possession of the third quarter, Mitchell hits a three to cut it to 17. And what I thought was interesting was, so the Cavs were like slowly coming back that entire fourth quarter. But I kind of felt like the thing about a 20-point lead is it when it gets down to 9 with 4 minutes left, like, that feels precarious, right? But mm-hmm. like, in the same way, it's like, it also took them 8.5 minutes to cut 11 points into it. At that same pace, they're going to run out of time. And that's basically what happened, is that, yeah, they cut it down to 4. Wolves had a bad turnover in there. But it's just like, you lose a stretch of time by 16 points. But when you're up 20, they just needed like one or two more plays. One made shot and a stop, and the game was over. And that's exactly what happened. And I thought Ant's poised down the stretch. They were still bringing two to the ball like they have all year. We're like a year removed from that Boston home game last year where he was just completely flummoxed by that look. And in the last 12 months, like, that's completely gone away. And I just thought he was incredibly poised down the stretch of the game, but also just like game wide, finding good shots, not overextending his, I mean, probably could have had a few more Ant possessions or whatever, but like, just efficient 50. I mean, like, what, he made half of his shots in the field, 4 of 7 from three, only got to the line twice. That kind of, if would have been able to grab a couple more free throws, he would have gotten over the 30-point mark. But like, 9 assists, 7 rebounds. Just like, it's a stretch from Ant that's just been incredibly impressive.
Yeah, no, he's been impressive. I mean, what he's doing is he's allowing, by him bringing the ball up, he's allowing the teams to come and collapse on him, but then he's also being able to find his teammates. That's why he had such, you know, a high clip of assists last night. I believe he had 9. But it's been amazing to just watch him actually assess the plays now instead of rushing the play, right? Before, it was like defenses would collapse and he would kind of get, like, you know, antsy with it. Now when he gets the ball, it's like, all right, well, I know where Jaden's at. I know where Rudy's at, you know? And I love what they're doing with Rudy, bringing him up to the top of the key to relieve that pressure. That's been extremely key for them, because now with him coming up to the top, now you're creating that pick where now you got the shooters at the corners where you got probably Nas and Jaden, and then you can still hit Julius when he's cutting. But the way that they've been utilizing that Rudy to the top of the key with Ant has been impressive, and I love what I'm seeing from him. He's taking timely shots, which I think is a lot better too, as in before, like, he would let the defense rush his shots. But all of his games that he's played on this stretch, his shot has been in the flow of the game. It's not like I feel like anything that he's putting up is forced. And I think that's where we're seeing the maturity in his game. As in last year or 2 years ago, you know, he would just be jacking up shots to be like, oh, I'm going for 40 tonight. Instead, now it's like he's letting the game come to him a lot easier, where he's able to, he knows when to attack. He knows when they're doubling. He knows when he can get his shot off against anybody. Like, they had Miro on him a couple of times, you know, where he's like, I got this. This is the mismatch. And he's attacking the mismatch instead of, sometimes before, he'd be like, oh, well, do I need to get my teammates involved right now? Now he's actually assessing the situation a lot better. And he's been amazing on the post. I think a lot of people aren't talking about that as well. He's been able to get to that post, and he's able to use that elbow jumper, or use that angle to be able to get his teammates a little bit more open as well with the spacing. So that's been amazing to see too. So I love what Ant's doing. He's not forcing anything. I think if he plays like this, you know, the Wolves will be tough to beat. They'll be a tough out for sure, because, like you said, in that Celtics game, when he you know, when they started harassing him, you know, defensively, you know, he kind of didn't know what to do. And remember when he expressed frustration in his post game. Mm-hmm. But I think that the growth and being able to be a student of the game, talking to MJ, you know, talking to certain people, working with Chris Hines, his coach, you know, those are the things that, those long sessions are finally paying off, and I'm definitely seeing a more mature Ant, and I love what I'm seeing from his game.
Yeah, and one thing I noticed as we kind of maybe transition to the Rudy part of it is, down the stretch of the game, the Wolves run like a very unstructured offense, right? They're not like a high pick and roll team. It's not like the extreme version of like the Rockets and Harden, where they were just running pick and roll every possession and attacking. Yeah. That the Wolves don't. They run a motion flow offense, more similar to like the Steph Curry Warriors of back in that day. Yep. Or even still today. But one thing they did down the stretch of that game is they were just running Ant Rudy pick and rolls.
Yeah, the whole time.
Down the stretch of the game, at least. And I, like, that's kind of something I would wonder is, like, is that the way, maybe all game, but especially down the stretch of the game, that, like, this team needs to play? Do they need more structured offense late in games, to make sure that they're getting like the proper look, that the turnovers aren't happening, although like those still came. And especially just like with Rudy on the court, obviously when you get he's involved in the action, which I think alleviates the non-shooting version of Rudy more when he's involved in the action. And it opens up the court. To transition to Rudy, he's just been, I think it's like unquestionable now. Like, this is the best stretch of basketball he's had in a Timberwolves uniform. Maybe if his entire career wasn't paying attention enough to every single game in Utah to really speak on that. But I mean, it's just like the numbers are there. Like, the Wolves are second in defense when he's on the court and dead last when he's off. They try to paper over the minutes without him on the court, but like, it's really hard to do. And then you mentioned offensively. Both like just simple like post-ups, or when he gets the ball deep against the smaller defender, far more often that shot is being dunked, laid in instead of chucked up off the backboard in a poor layup attempt. Like, yeah, last night, 5 of 5, how many of those were like, I don't think more than like one of those was like just a straight dunk lob situation. Like, it was, he was catching the ball and going up with the strong. He had the one assist. Yeah, he probably didn't get an assist on the play, but like the behind the back pass to, I think, Bones in the corner.
Yeah.
I'm guessing Bones took one too many dribbles to get Rudy an assist there, but That's another example, like the short roll stuff where he's getting the ball down the lane. He had a nice assist to Julius late in the game where Ant Rudy pick and roll, Ant found him rolling to the rim, and Rudy found the correct pass to Julius in the dunker spot for the layup. So Rudy's just playing better. Teammates are trusting him more. I heard a story, I think Chris Hine told this of, this was the last game against the Heat. I wasn't there that game, but Rudy was wide open under the rim, right? And they just missed him, just didn't see him. And they both, I think Nas went up to him and said, "Hey, that's on us. You were open. We should have got you the ball." Ant said, "Like, we'll make sure to get you the ball." Like that, I don't think that was happening in previous seasons. Because it's both. Like, they need to obviously trust him, and they have done that more, but like, there's going to be situations where like just plays aren't made, mistakes are made. I think it's important, like, because Rudy's confidence, I think, is such a big, and playing in the flow is what he would say. Like, because that's such a big part of his game, I think keeping him when they aren't able to find him in an obvious situation where they should have, like making sure he understands that, like, this wasn't Julius not getting you the ball in Toronto last year. Like that was just a mistake. Yeah. We got you. Yeah. We'll find you next time.
No, for sure. I agree with you. I mean, I think the stretch that Rudy's been on and just his play this season in general, defensively, I mean he's defensive player of the year, like Julius said, in my opinion. Been locking down. He's taking on every challenge. It's not like I feel like in the past, the more athletic centers used to give him some trouble. Now he's moving his feet. He's getting with the, like, you know, a Jared Allen would have gave him some trouble, you know, 2 years ago. I feel like last night he was locking him up. Evan Mobley would have gave him some trouble 2 years ago. He was locking him up, you know, defensively. Same thing with Bam the other day. You know, he was giving Bam the work. I mean, some of the adjustments, I would love to see what he came into this season and was like, all right, I need to work on this. Like, what's the difference between Rudy from last year and this year when it comes to him prepping for the season? Because I feel like him coming into the season this year, he's a lot quicker on his feet. He's catching the ball a lot better. In the past, you know, it was kind of fumbled and bobbled a little bit. Now he's getting the ball and he's making a decision, whether that decision is a behind the back pass or whether that decision is a, you know, setting a screen. Or I think his playmaking ability when it comes to passing the ball has been kind of slept on too, because he gets the ball to people in the spots that they need him as well. But I just think that the adjustment, whatever that adjustment is, I'm going to try to ask him the next time, you know, we get the chance to talk to him, maybe on Sunday. I want to know what the adjustment was, like what went into this offseason where he came back and was like, all right, I'm gonna lock in defensively, but then I'm also gonna work on my mobility. I want to know what it is, because he's playing with a high motor now, and like you said, his teammates trust him. I talked to him the other day about, you know, him working on his two man game with Ant now, and how Ant's, you know, gaining that trust as a leader, and you know, even in the, like, I think it was the Miami game, Ant missed him on a lob, and Rudy was like jumping up and down, like under the rim, like wide open. And then Ant came over to him, was like, "Hey, my bad, man. Like, you know, I got you. That's my fault. Da 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 da." Just tapped him on the butt. And then the next play, I think he caught him going in there with a pick and pop. Like, that's when Rudy did his little pop shot, little floater. But you know, but I'm seeing the growth from Rudy as a leader too. And he's becoming a leader on this team. Like, I feel like when he's unfazed, the team's unfazed. And you know, and I think that's a good value to have. And defensively, he's doing some things that we haven't seen him do in a Wolves uniform. I would truly say. I mean, you know, the big difference, second and last, is crazy when he's on and off the floor. So some of the, it's not even the blocks. Like, the blocks are there. He's rebounding at a high clip now again, like the Utah version of Rudy. And that's what this team needs, because defensively, When they allow teams to to get those offensive boards and get those second chance points, that's what usually hurts the Timberwolves. If you look at this recent stretch of games that they've been on, they're not letting a lot of second chance points. You know, they're grabbing rebounds. I mean, Rudy and Julius have been doing a great job of grabbing rebounds too, and I know we're going to transition into Julius. But if Rudy continues to play like this, there's no reason why he can't be Defensive Player of the Year, anchoring the defense like this and being able to – his biggest attribute to me is communication. Every time I talk to players about Rudy's defense, they say he communicates the best. So when you have somebody back there that communicates and somebody that you can trust back there, I think that's what makes it even more special.
Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, I don't think he's going to win Defensive Player of the Year. Just feels like voters are not going to want to give him his fifth award in that area. But I agree with you. I think, I mean, again, I don't watch Chet Holmgren every game. I don't watch Wemby every game. But like, it's hard to imagine that like a player could have like a bigger impact. And looking at his stats and what we're 38 mm-hmm. games into the season, he's got the highest field goal percentage of his career so far at 72.5%, leading the NBA in that mark. Same thing with obviously 2-point percentage and effective field goal percentage, which is like basically mm-hmm. takes into account threes are worth more than two. So even when you take into account 3-point shooters, he's leading the league in that area. Free throw percentage is down, but that's probably just not really, that's small sample yeah. size, but he's averaging 11.3 rebounds per game, which is third in the NBA. Last year was not that high. Like that's, like you mentioned, that's the biggest thing is like, it feels like he's just dominating both ends of the floor.
You feel like there's going to be voters fatigue? That's what you feel like for defensive player?
Yeah, if Chet and or Wemby play enough games, I just think they're going to give it to them.
You feel like it's the LeBron factor where it's like, all right, we know he's that guy when it comes to the most valuable player or whatever like that, but we got to give it to somebody else because we've already voted for you like 5 times.
I mean, people don't like Rudy. I don't think it's anything more than that. Did you see what Bam said after the second game against the Heat? Like they were asked like if Rudy was affecting them, and he was basically like, no, that's on us. It's like, no one, and I get the players don't vote for the award, but like, I think that sentiment kind of goes beyond just like any one person. They just, people don't like and respect Rudy as much as they probably should. At this point, it's like, that's on them because Rudy's been awesome on both ends of the court.
He's been awesome, man.
And after last playoffs, obviously he had the great closing game in LA, but like he didn't play well enough in those playoffs, especially against Oklahoma City. And with this version of the roster, they need Rudy to be like an all-star caliber player. And that's exactly, he won't make the all-star team either, but like that's what he's been on this roster. And so when this team has three all-star caliber players, when we throw Rudy in, like that's where the championship ceiling comes from. And I think you see it when they are having poor stretches. It's because, I mean, obviously Ant has up and down games too, but it's because Rudy has an off night, or as we'll talk about now, is Julius has like an up and down month.
Yeah.
And in that's, I just think in general, I think, and obviously me and you and all the people that do pods or that talk about and cover this team, I think we have a tendency, and especially like, this is like, we have a tendency to overreact to the bad games and then overreact to the good games as well. When I think it's better to just look at like the general through lines, right? And so yes, the Atlanta and Brooklyn losses are bad, and like those type of performances were all too common. I do think that there's like kind of on the flip side when they win 4 in a row against 4 Eastern Conference teams, 3 of which are obviously the Wizards are down, but like the Heat and the Cavs are obviously solid playoff teams in that conference. So I think it's like you don't want to then all the issues that we talked about after the Atlanta loss, maybe we overstated them then, but I think it's important to say that they're not completely gone now. And so Julius, I think, is the perfect example of this, where I think if they had voted for All-Star on December 1st, he would have made it and had a less than productive December. And thinking back to last season, like that's kind of what happened last year. He had positive months, he had negative months, but the through line was a borderline all-star player, a top whatever player in the league. And so I think like last night's a good example of that, where that was the type of Julius performance that we were seeing in the first month of the season, where he's a big hub of the offense. He was two assists shy of a triple-double. The defense wasn't, and rebounding weren't, he had 11 rebounds. Like, those were the stuff that weren't happening kind of in his less than ideal December play. And he's been great the past few games. And I just think, like, that's when he has a bad game next time, I think we can say, like, he'll come back. And when he has another fantastic game, well, we'll say, well, it's like the bad game. You take the bad games with the two. And it does feel like the through line is up, in the sense of playing well against good teams, all of that, like, has been better than last year, similar to Rudy. But I guess it's important to, like, for me to, like, find that balance, if that makes sense.
No, that makes sense. I mean, it's tough to find the balance when you have a shot maker like Anthony Edwards next to you, though, right? Because some games, you know, it's going to be your game, because you're going to have those games where Ant might be struggling. You know, and those are the games that we need him to pick it up and be able to play at that all-star level, you know. But then you're going to have, you know, an anomaly like last night, where all the starters just got it going. And then now you can be that triple-double Randall. Are we going to get that version of the Timberwolves every night? No. You know, so we got to make sure that when Randall has those moments, he has to be balanced and even keel, where at least, all right, if your shot's not going, then that means you probably got 10 assists and you got, you know, 8 rebounds. And I think that's where his consistent medium will be, is, okay, let me figure out another way to get my teammates going, just in case if I'm not going offensively, you know. And when Ant's going, and when Jaden and those guys are going, if Julius is off, he got to take advantage of getting them going and making sure that they're still in the game. Sometimes I think with Julius, he'll get caught up he'll basically get caught up in the game, where it's like, okay, well, now I'm over here defending this team. This team keeps making shots, but then he feels like sometimes he got to go shot for shot with certain teams that they're playing against. And I think that when you start forcing it, that's when that balance doesn't become true, because that's when you're overdoing it and now you're not making the right reads. And as a basketball player, even when I played, you know, not saying I'm an NBA type basketball player, but when I played, if somebody keeps making shots on me or something like that, then I get caught up in the game of me and that person, right? And I feel like sometimes players do get caught up in that, where they're like, oh, okay, I got to go back at them. But going back at that other player on the other team is not the right play for the team, you know? And sometimes I think that Julius gets sucked into that, where, you know, he's trying to make the right play, but then the right play might not be to take that three, or, you know, early in the shot clock, or, you know, the best read for you might not be to pass it right now. It might be you need to pump fake and drive to the hoop. So I think he just has to stay consistent with what he's doing. Make sure he's a bully in the paint. Make sure that he's grabbing better boards this year compared to last year. Last year, him grabbing rebounds was an issue all year. So this year, he's doing a lot better. Make sure that you find your teammates assist-wise. You know, if he does that, if he stays with his bread and butter with the rebounding and assist, the offense is going to flow easy for him. It's just more so how do you find that balance of when it's time to get my teammates involved and when I got to go and get mine. And I think that's the thing that he's been, you can kind of tell he struggled with it. And I thought he found himself when he got hurt last year, and then he came back, because that's when he started playing exactly how I'm talking about. But it's still early. You know, we're not even halfway yet, you know, halfway through the season. But I will say this, if you take this Timberwolves team, what they've been doing on this 4-game stretch, and you tell me that Julius is going to play like that, and you drop them in the playoffs, I don't think anybody would beat them. And that's just how I feel, because the starters have been playing lights out. But then I feel like Julius is setting that up too with his play, you know. And the thing is, I feel like it's not talked about enough how much he sacrifices to make this team better with playing with Ant, you know, because he does defer to Ant, and he knows that Ant's that guy. And last night he even said it, he's the best player in the world. So, you know, so I feel like, you know, if Julius gets the chance to be able to flourish more in the half court, which he does in the playoffs, I think this team is going to be okay.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, I think it's finding that consistency, and obviously it's completely fine to have great months and less than stellar months like that. That happens. There's maybe a little bit more consistency, but like you said, I expect in these, like, to see whatever season long numbers and value have been, I'll expect those to continue, because that's what happened last year, and that's the positive of making two straight Western Conference Finals runs, is that, like, obviously, like, there's a complacency that potentially has hurt them, but like also there's a confidence that has to come with that, like just knowing that, especially from after an up and down season like last year, like there has to be a confidence that comes with, like, we know we've done this before, we've had rough stretches or rough games, and we were still able to compete and win playoff games. But before we wrap up, I did want to talk about the Trae Young trade. I know you covered Trae out in Oklahoma back in his college days. I was surprised at how little Trae was, how little Atlanta was willing to part with to get off of him, in the sense of only got CJ McCollum and Corey Kispert were the two, with then no picks coming back. It feels like 12 months ago, 2 years ago, they could have gotten multiple picks and like almost like a similar package to Donovan Mitchell or whatever. Like, I don't know. They could have gotten a lot. And I'm curious if you think that, like, could this possibly be like a wake up call for Trae Young, in the sense, like, he's on the Wizards now. Like, it's kind of rock bottom. And I wonder, and he's still a really good player, and I'm sure he'll help Washington win games, which probably isn't even something they, in the immediate short term, they even want. But
yeah,
I guess, like, for him to be like a really, really positive player, like the defense has, and the even more playmaking, I don't know what has to change, but like I'm sure it's tough for him to just be basically salary dumped by the franchise that he has spent his whole career with.
It was tough to watch, you know, because I always thought he was gonna be a Hawk for his whole career. I really did. You know, from the Knicks rivalry, I mean, you know, all that stuff. I'm like, you know, you can't change any of that. But I do want to say, he said that the Wizards were one of his top destinations. So, I mean, he probably believes in the management over there. You know, I know they got a great management team over there in Washington. But to your point, I would have thought he would have came with some picks or something, you know. Yeah. You know, Trae's a top talent, in my opinion. And you know, I think the Hawks will probably, you know, regret doing this. I do. Do I think this is a wake up call for Trae? No. Trae's the type of player, he's so confident in himself. He's like, okay, I'm just gonna keep showing them what they're missing now. You know, and all this does is add a chip to his shoulder. I don't think it's a wake up call, though. Trae's always been awake. He's been awake this whole time. You know, I think it's just more so now, you know, he's going to try to make them pay. I mean, they play the Hawks twice in February. So that will be interesting to see. You know, I would have traded him to the Western Conference. I don't want to see you. You know, that's what I would have did, but, you know. Teach his own. But I think that, honestly, I think Trae will, he'll have some, you know, he'll have some learning curves, you know, in Washington. Obviously, you gotta, you know, adjust to a new team. I think he'll make Middleton better. I think he'll make Sarr better. They still got some young pieces over there with Keontae over there. You know, they got some guys over there. But I think this is more so for the future. Like, okay, like, let's see what Trae can do the next couple years type of thing. But it'll be interesting to see if he's a moving piece too, because you see what Washington's done. They've made trades and they've moved people right after. So it'll be interesting to see if that's something that can come about too. You never know. Washington might be able to move him and get some picks and another player. You never know. So there might be some more moving pieces that we don't know about. But I do want to spin this back over to you. Do you feel like the Timberwolves need to make a trade? You know, in that playmaking department, do you feel like they need that upgrade in the point guard? Because obviously, you know, a lot of people were tying Trae to Minnesota. Do you feel like the Wolves still need that? Or do you like what they're doing now with the pivot to having Ant bring the ball down and have the ball in his hands a little bit more?
Yeah, for me, the starters, I think the starters are, we saw it last night, like the starters are in a really good spot. They are playing extremely well. They work well together. I think what the team needs is a point guard that they can trust in certain matchups to close the game. Probably, obviously, in the past couple of years, that was Mike. They needed Mike on that roster, and they could get a 32-year-old Mike Conley in here. Obviously, that'd be the perfect ideal. But what's tricky is just like the salaries. If you're not going to trade one of those top six guys, which obviously in any trade, the starters plus Nas, like you'd want to keep those guys in house. And so if you're not doing that, you're looking at, you really only have enough salary to get, unless you're going to trade Mike Conley, which I think comes with a lot of baggage as well. But then you're looking at trading incredibly low on Rob Dillingham, on Terrence Shannon, and then Leonard Miller's $2 million obviously could get you some more money, but like you can't take in more money than you send out. So it's I don't see the unless you're willing to trade Julius or Nas, which again mid season just seems, and we've already talked about like Rudy is indispensable. So if you're not willing to trade any of those guys, you're just not going to have enough salary to match anything else. So I honestly think, especially as the team starts to win games, I think that like this will be the status quo, and the off season will be the time when the financial restrictions lighten up and they have more flexibility is when the next big trade will come. But like you can't, Tim Connelly's done it before, has surprised us before, so maybe it's possible. I think what the Trae Young trade shows is that like when you're a $50 million player and you're not one of the 20 best players in the league, I don't know where Trae would rank, but like Trae comes with baggage, unfortunately, at least right now. And obviously Washington will try to turn that around. And it seems like those type of assets, like Zion, like whoever else of that, like where they're coming, they're highly paid, but come with baggage. Like,
yeah,
they don't seem to have a lot of value right now. And I don't know if the Wolves will want to trade for something like that, or maybe something like Darius Garland would make sense, where they're not, there's no baggage in the same way, but there's like Cleveland eventually feels like it's not working between their top two guards, like that type of trade. But like for right now, it's hard to see where that trade comes from. And I just kind of have the feeling that they'll try to add on the margins. Whether it's backup center or guard, probably to me more likely a backup big, but like the big trade or whatever, I don't see that as likely personally.
Okay. Now, and my last question to you is, this team constructed now, do they make their third trip to the Western Conference Finals? Yes or no?
It's tough. It just cause like, who knows what the standings are going to be like. I would probably say it's like 50-50. It's a toss up. I mean, I just think like, here's what I'll say is that I like the Wolves' chances. I think they're as good as anyone in the Western Conference. I think healthy Denver and Oklahoma City are slightly or maybe a step above them, and maybe San Antonio is at their level and Houston is at their level and the Lakers are probably slightly below their level. And so it's going to be like, those are the six teams to me fighting for the two Western Conference Finals spots. So like, I think it'd be unfair to like give them like a better than 50% chance just because like there's so many good teams. And so you're going to be in a coin flip series probably in both of those first two rounds, unless you're able to get to the two seed, which is possible. And so it's like, but I it's 1,000,000% possible. I think them winning the championship is possible. You're never going to there's never going to be a season where it's like the Wolves are 50% chance to win the title. No, it's like, if you keep stacking up your 5-10% chance every year or whatever it ends up being, like, I think you just got to hit once. Right. And you got to hope that it comes through.
No, I agree with you. I was just trying to figure it out, because I was trying to see if maybe one of those trade pieces can catapult them to be in that OKC type of conversation, you know. And I think that's what you look for if you're you know, Tim Conley, you're looking at, okay, what gets us, if we're going to do something, what's going to get us guaranteed to be in that upper echelon where we're competing for that title now? If we don't have that in front of us right now, then let's wait until the offseason to see what we can do.
Yep, absolutely. I just think, like, this team is too good, unfortunately, to make, like, a risky trade. And so I just kind of think it's going to have to come in the off season, like you said. Like,
yeah,
when you have a full training camp to, like, work out any roster kinks, but maybe they lose a couple or the deadline's still a month away. So
that's true.
Can change. Travis, anything to plug?
Just Sneak Reporter on all social media, sneakreporter.com. Check us out. We got a lot of content on there as well. We got some stuff coming up. And yeah, working on some podcast stuff behind the scenes. So trying to get that going. And yeah, that's pretty much it, man. I appreciate you, Ryan. Two words. You know, it just means a lot, you know, to have me on the podcast after a win. Mm-hmm. I mean, I appreciate you. Yeah, we're back now. So I appreciate you, man. And like I said yesterday and I said today, you know, we're in some tough times right now, but let's all stay together and yeah, everything's going to be okay.
Absolutely. Well, thank you everyone for listening. Leo and I will be back early next week. Go Wolves.
Ayoo!